And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. David, the name of our show is Forward with Falk, and what I'd like to know is whether you licensed it to the Harris campaign, because the Harris campaign's slogan seems to be Forward with Kamala. Don't we deserve something?
I wish I had. Who knew? You know, she's talking about a new way forward, but could have copyrighted Forward or something like that.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. What does that mean that you haven't been protecting our futures?
Well, you know, I picked the name years ago.
Well, but that's the whole point of being able to see the future. You have to anticipate.
Make some money as a fortune teller on the side, right?
Yeah.
But don't ask me who's going to win the election.
I won't ask you who's going to win the election, because nobody can know, because it's too tight. And the people who say that they can tell from the tea leaves of the pollsters don't realize that when it's tight like this, the polling is an opinion, because it's the opinion of the pollsters how to weigh the results that they're getting and how to construct the model that they're getting. If it were, you know, if there was 6-7 point difference, you could say, okay, that means something. But it's always within the margin of error. You can't say that these polls are meaningful, except that they mean nothing, except that they mean that you got to work if you want to win.
Yeah, and it is very, very tight. So
let me ask you about the debate, so-called debate that we watched, and whether you think this debate has any significance in terms of what the campaign is and what that significance could be.
You know, historically, there have been a few debates that have had import. We had the first debate between Kennedy and Nixon. Of course, that was distinguished. The TV debate was different than the radio debate. People who saw the TV, you know.
I don't recall any radio debates.
Well, it wasn't the radio debate. It was listening on the radio.
Yeah.
And the people listening on the radio thought Nixon won. The people who looked
No, I mean before the Nixon-Kennedy debate.
No, they weren't.
There were no debates, right?
There were no debates.
Yeah.
But what came out of that one was that Kennedy could hold his own and would be acceptable, so to speak. And Nixon looked, you know, he looked terrible. He looked shady and what have you. And then you had the Carter-Ford debate, where Ford made that gaffe about Eastern Europe not being under the domination of the Soviet Union. You had the Carter Reagan debate, where the Carter folks and the Democrats were kind of gleeful that Reagan was the candidate, that he'd be so extreme and so right wing, and he came across as acceptable. He held his own, and so you had that one. And
I don't think any was as consequential as the Trump Biden debate, the last one.
Right.
I mean, after all, that one got knocked Biden out of the race.
Well, yeah, what I want to say is that that being part of it, this year, I've referred in past shows to being like 1968, that there were all sorts of surprises. Remember, in 68, we had a president pull out of the sitting president pull out, even though he didn't lose the New Hampshire primary, he pulled out of it. And then we had, you know, unfortunately, assassination. Here we had an assassination attempt. We had the raucous convention in Chicago. This year, the Democrats went back to Chicago. But when they went back, everything had changed then, and they wound up nominating, Harris Actually, she had had the
vote. Well, she'd already not. She was nominated. She had been nominated. Yeah.
They went to that. And so this, you know, this year you mentioned the debate of, that Joe Biden really failed terribly in the debate. Trump wasn't that much better. And that got overshadowed by Biden being so bad in a debate. But this one, I mean, Trump was generally Trump. And people had given advice as to what he should or shouldn't do. Mostly that he should stick to the issues and that he had winning issues on immigration, on inflation, things like that. And he just couldn't pull it off. But what we saw, because nobody knew how Harris would perform in this debate. She hadn't debated since, for over 4 years. And she had there was no real Democratic debates for the primary. And, boy, she showed that she could, hold it together. Not only hold it together, but that she could really, it was a psychological debate. She really got to Trump like nobody had been able to get to him before. He always had the offense.
And why do you think she was able to do that? And neither any of the 16 or 19 Republican opponents that he's had or the various Democratic opponents, nobody's done it. She did it. Why do you think that is?
Well, everybody, and including Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush and all these pros, were treating Trump like a ordinary politician. And he wasn't. He was an out-of-the-box type of politician. And they didn't know how to handle that. And being so different from the other politicians turned into a strength. The people were looking for that. And I continue to believe that there was a psychology behind this. I'm wondering whether or not she actually had, in addition to her prep team, whether she had some specialists, some psychologists, explaining to her our analyses. There are political neuropsychologists down at George Washington University and who really maybe were able to analyze this not from a politician's point of view, but from this out-of-the-box point of view, and to exploit what heretofore had been a strength into a weakness.
Well, now you're a lawyer. My thought was that her training as a prosecutor is what allowed her to do what she did. Her skills, being able to get into the confrontation with a witness and have the witness say things the witness didn't want to say, or say things in a way that made the witness look bad, even if he said what he wanted to say. A skill which I don't know how prosecutors learn this skill or what part of legal training for prosecutors that is, but it's got to be something that they learn and that they practice.
Well, yeah, I think that part of what a lot of what she had was her organizational skill, her ability to put together her argument or put together the offense against Trump and to maintain it was that's a prosecutorial that's a legal skill there, and I agree with you in how to get how to read a witness and how to play off of them or play their weaknesses. Probably studying hours and hours of Trump rallies and Trump his previous debates, seeing where you knew he was going to go, and actually beating him to the punch, and leading him in away from what would be his strength arguments, and into his foibles, so to speak.
She also had a great advantage, and that was that Trump underestimated her. In fact,
yes,
he despises her. whether he despises her because she's not white, or whether he despises her because she's a woman, or whether he despises her for some amalgam of those two horrible things, he despises her. And when he said that she's not smart, he meant it.
All of the above.
Yeah.
All of the above.
Well, when you come into a struggle and you misestimate the strength of your opponent, you're at a handicap.
That's a big, big mistake.
Yeah.
And, you know, he thought he could intimidate her, and she came out and practically ran across the stage. And as someone noted, she invaded his space.
Right.
She went right over to his. He wasn't coming over to meet her halfway.
Right.
That's what happened with Biden the first time in 2020. This wasn't. She went right up and showed that, hey, I'm here and I'm ready. And, you know, a lot of the people will tell you that the best way to watch the debate is not to listen to it, but to watch it with the sound turned down and just watch the body language and the expressions. And they had the side by sides of Trump and Harris. And Trump was constantly scowling. He was grimacing. He wouldn't look at her. When he was arguing, he had this agitated puss on him. And she was confident in the way, you know, she smiled when she needed to smile. She looked like, what the heck's he talking about, when she needed to do that. And he gave her plenty of opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a pity that the debate had to take this form. But of course, with Trump, you can't expect a debate about substance because he doesn't know anything. He's a very ignorant man. And aside from that, he speaks gibberish. He's not able to formulate thoughts. His sentence structure is such that it's impossible to know what he means, if he means anything. So the truth is that there are a lot of important issues that the country faces that it would be useful to discuss, that should be discussed, which just get lost.
He talks in generalities, and he talks in superlatives, and he talks in things that can't be disproven, making these wild claims type of stuff. And even the moderators, kind of got to him on some of the questions. You know, the question about healthcare, saying, you know, you've been talking about this for 9 years.
Yeah.
Where's your plan?
Yeah, there's no plan. I have concepts of a plan.
Concepts of a plan.
What the hell does that mean, concepts of a plan?
Well, he's faking it.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. It's a sentence that has no meaning, concepts of a plan.
It was the old fake it till you make it. But at this point, he's such a known quantity that people want it to be made, not faked.
Yeah.
And that thing. And she had some really good lines, though, you know. He was fired by 81 million Americans, and he can't process that. That was a heck of a line.
Yeah, that's also the truth.
Reminding him.
The thing is that substantive issues, you have a problem. She has no reason to make clear what her position is on almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because whatever she says puts her in danger of alienating somebody.
Right.
And since she doesn't need to alienate anybody, she's, on the other hand, she wants to win this, and she could win it by as little as 40,000 votes nationwide, right? Spread out on three states.
Right.
She's on tenterhooks. She's got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, that that's awful. That means that, she may get many more votes than Biden got. And he may get many less votes than he got last time. So the margin may not be 7 million. Maybe the margin will be 8 or 9 or 10 million if she wins. And yet, there'll have been no substantive discussion about policy. So that the American people will not have given direction to the new administration. That's a loss to the American people. The presence of MAGA in the debate is a dead loss for the American people.
Yeah, but elections a lot of times are about emotion and feeling as rather than logic and intellect. And Trump's gotten a lot of that over the years, the MAGA. The thing is that the Harris campaign now has this Obama-like feeling of upbeat. Instead of hope, we're talking about joy types of things. She's talking about turning the page type of stuff. There's still a long way to go. People are going to start voting. But, you know, and I, the MAGA people are still out there.
They're out there.
I saw, you know, there's a couple billboards on the expressway, one going into Scranton, one going out of Scranton, that are being sponsored by private individuals. One is a Korean War vet who bought a billboard. And you know,
you don't know he's a Korean War vet. Well, you just know that the tagline says that.
Yeah.
You don't know who he is.
It says that. So yeah. We'll see. And they're, you know, I was following a car today, an SUV, and the back window, both sides had, they must have had like 15 Trump-type stickers on it, and the bumper sticker said Ultra MAGA. We're seeing pickup trucks running around with, you know, flags on them. They're still pretty intense.
Well, they are pretty intense, and the fact that the Democrats are not really fighting on a program means that they are reduced to having to mobilize the base, because the only way to whittle away the other guy's base is to say, this is the program and this is what you should support. But if you can't say that, and they're not saying that, they're not going to say that, then it really becomes a turnout-the-base election. And that means that you got to, for the Democrats, they've got to emphasize abortion rights.
Which they're doing.
They should emphasize health care, but I don't see much talk about health care. But health care is a big plus for the Democrats. I mean, after all, how many 50 million Americans have participated in Obamacare?
Yeah.
That didn't have health care before?
Well, if you see some of the Democratic ads, and if you heard her speech this weekend in Wilkes-Barre, she talked about that, that you know, pre-existing conditions and the $35 insulin
path, right,
and things like that. But the other thing they're emphasizing is still the Project 2025 that Trump is desperately trying to run away from.
As he should, but as he can't.
Since
it was his people who wrote it.
Right.
If the only thing that he stands for is what he himself wrote, he stands for nothing, because he's never written anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
The president doesn't make the policy. The president just solves the problems that the people down below haven't solved. A well-heeled administration, well-oiled administration, rather, doesn't have a lot of problems. And the policy is there. It's developed by the various departments, secretaries, and they administer these policies. And they do it. They make the policy. In Trump's case, the people who wrote Project 2025 are the people who are going to run the country if Trump gets elected, and they will make the policy. And what they wrote is what they will do. And Trump may not know what they're doing. Yeah, he's not terribly interested.
Well, that was the first Trump administration. Other people wrote the policies or did what they want, and he just went along with it.
Yeah.
If you remember, before he was officially nominated, they had Kasich.
I know that story. That's when he sent his son to see Kasich, right?
Yeah, and he said, "We'll let you, you know, run the government, do things." He said, "What's the president going to do?" And he said, "Well, he's going to be making America great again."
Exactly.
That encapsulated it.
That's his understanding of how it should work. Now, if he was in France, that's how it would work. That's the way the government is structured. Not this government. But Trump doesn't know anything about the government. He doesn't know how it works. He never learned how it works.
No.
He doesn't care to know how it works because it would interfere with golf.
And the only thing he cared about is who was going to be in certain slots that would help, that would be loyal to him.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And of course, he had all the best people working for him, all of whom he fired.
Over and over. And of course, he was.
Yeah, and he said about the Democrats, they never fired anybody. Yeah, they didn't fire anybody. On the other hand, they got people who would carry out policies that they agreed with.
Well, they had competent people, although there were some people probably should have been fired, everyone, you know, or at least, but not a lot.
Shouldn't have been fired. They should never have been hired.
Well,
they shouldn't have gotten to the point where they needed to be fired.
Well, I mean, there were a few things, but not a lot of them.
The Secretary of the Interior, right? Remember? Secretary of Commerce. Agriculture Secretary.
You mean under Trump?
Under Trump, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. These were guys who were either out-and-out crooks or Secretary of Education who wanted to abolish the Education Department. Why should they be hired?
Yeah, or the surgeon that was the head of housing.
That's right.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the campaign rolls on. It rolled into Wilkes-Barre on Friday. They went to Wilkes College, which is, Trump goes to Wilkes-Barre and he goes into the arena. I'm not sure why they picked the college, but they did. Although it's a good pick because you want younger people. They couldn't get to King's College because that's a Catholic institution, and with the abortion issue, mm-hmm. they would never allow Harris there. Mm-hmm. They might not have been sure if they could get it. You know, the first rule of if you're picking a venue is always pick one that's too small.
Exactly.
Rather than too big.
Right.
The old Dick Tuck story about Richard Nixon when he was running for Senate, and he hired the what was it, at Stanford or something? He hired the biggest hall he could and then didn't publicize it at all. that kind of thing. She had a crowd. She had a boisterous crowd. She was introduced by the mayor of Wilkes-Barre.
She had two rallies today, right? Or even three. Yeah.
She had Johnstown. Uh-huh. It was in Charlotte. She got a big crowd, 25,000 in Charlotte. She's been spending a lot of time in western Pennsylvania, interestingly. But the mayor of Wilkes-Barre couldn't pronounce her name right, which if you knew the mayor, you'd know that. Bob Casey was there. Governor Shapiro came in, on that. Interestingly, Congressman Matt Cartwright wasn't there and his name wasn't mentioned. And, it makes you wonder why.
Well, I hope you ask him. You're his friend. Ask him. Let's find out.
Yeah, I'll find out from him or his wife. Who I'll see on there. I saw some of the Democratic politicians before the rally at a senior citizens fair. And like Evie McNulty, who was our recorder of deeds, and her husband was the county commissioner in Scranton and whatever. And she said she wasn't going down, but it was her birthday, so can understand a little bit of that. But you'd think that you'd want to get as an official, you'd get some FaceTime, at least briefly a handshake time with the vice president and possibly the president-elect. Harris had the big crowd anyway. It'll be interesting as to how many more times that they come back to Scranton or if they come back to Scranton.
I wonder if she's going to make any comments, pro-union comments, the same way that Biden did. That was probably the best thing that Biden did in his campaigning.
Yeah, she mentioned that that the middle class and unions, but it wasn't as big an emphasis as what Biden had.
Yeah,
on there in her speech. So, We'll see. I wonder, you know, why she doesn't get her running mate in around here, Luzerne County, because he seems like a blue collar kind of guy.
And I thought he was picked to be the guy, the ambassador to the rural counties.
Yeah, and he's been, he's been in Pennsylvania at times. I have a feeling he will be back at some point. So we'll have to see.
Now, you mentioned Matt Cartwright. Do you know anything about how his campaign is coming?
The people I've talked to say that they're fairly confident, but they're taking nothing for granted. They still think it's going to be close, like his elections always are. But they're organized. Every time I'm on North Washington Avenue and I look in there's people there working. The place is always manned, and they've got their sheets up on the wall for assignments and things like that. There's some ads out now that are attacking his opponent, Bresnahan. He was trying to sell that he was a third generation businessman and a union employer and this or that. And the ad, which is really sponsored by the House Democratic Committee, not Matt Cartwright himself, came out and said, "Hey, here's a guy. It was a family business, and he sold it out to a hedge fund, and then he took the money and invested it in made a fortune investing in China."
Is that true?
I don't know. I know he sold the company out.
Uh-huh.
To a hedge fund, although they allow him to run the company.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know what he did, where he got his investments. I do know one of the reasons he was picked was that he's fairly wealthy and could help self-finance the campaign. I don't know how much money he's raising on his own or from beyond the things that the Republicans are, giving him to try to flip this seat.
And have you heard anything about the attorney general race? I know you've been very interested in that race.
Yeah, that's a very important. Of all the row offices, that's the most important race because they're going to be in. That's the person who's going to have to defend the election when there's challenges to it. And Josh Shapiro was that person last time. And DePasquale has this big problem, is never prosecuted a case. But over the weekend, for the first time, I saw a pro DePasquale ad, and it featured all of these law enforcement people saying what DePasquale had done for law enforcement in enforcing other rules and regulations when he was the auditor general. Now,
he was a good auditor general.
Yeah, he was. He was a very good auditor general, and so they're kind of fudging the fact that he doesn't have prosecutorial experience, but they are saying that he has, supported law enforcement.
Yeah.
And to have four or five people in uniform to say that, and that he has endorsements is pretty good. So we'll see. Right now,
all right. Well, we'll see how this campaign develops. Now we've come to an end of our road for today.
All right, and. We're still forward.
We're still forward. Forward with Kamala and also with David.
That's it.
That's
we'll,
it.
We'll see you next
week. See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time, same place.